Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
I'm John Batchelor with Bob Zimmerman. The book is Genesis, the story of Apollo 8, the first manned flight to another world. Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders on board Apollo 8 going round and round the moon. A little disappointing, but they're taking photographs that are spectacular. One of Earthrise that you've all seen on stamps. You see it everywhere. It's so commonplace. There's a small debate about who took what photograph. Bob settles it by saying one was in color and one was in black and white. Which is which, Bob? I can't remember.
Yes, during the moment when the Earthrise was occurring, there was multiple Earthrises, but this one, they happened to be looking right at the Earth coming up because of issues with controlling the capsule. So they all saw the Earth coming up, and they suddenly realized that the camera program didn't include getting an Earthrise. So they scrambled to get a picture. And the camera at the moment had black and white film in it. Anders was in charge of taking pictures. Bill Borman grabs the camera and takes a quick black and white picture. And Anders says, there was a little friction between the two of them about who's in control. Anders says, hey, I'm supposed to do that. And so they quickly scramble to get color image pictures to film into the camera. And then Anders takes the famous color picture we've all seen. I must point out that it is always framed incorrectly on Earth. It's always framed with the horizon on the bottom. And if you look at the cover of Genesis, my book, the lunar horizon is on the right side because Anders did not take this picture with the horizon on the bottom. He saw the capsule and the Earth as different objects in space going around the waist of the moon and coming out the side of the moon as objects in space. And so he took the picture with the horizon on the side. But he took that picture. Later on, they forgot about this whole dispute about color and black and white. So and Borman thought he took the picture. And then later on, Lovell would say he took the picture just to bug both of them. But when I was researching Apollo 8, I discovered that I read the transcripts and discovered exactly what happened, and then that cleared up the dispute.
They're coming to Christmas Eve. There's to be a TV broadcast. Detail, the camera, as I recall, Bob, it wasn't experimental. They dealt with the camera on a Gemini, but this camera in particular, was it color? I can't remember. Is black and white?
No. All right, so I'll go through the camera history. They had not used a video camera at all on Gemini. They used it for the first time on Apollo 7. It was black and white, and it was black and white on this mission as well. The first telecast in lunar orbit, when they were describing the lunar surface, they had a problem with one of the lenses, so they could not show the Earth well, but they could show the lunar surface. They fixed that problem for the second telecast on Christmas Eve. And I must emphasize that this was Christmas Eve, three men orbiting another world, talking to the world. And as the head of NASA's Public Relations Department, Julian Shea, told Borman, more people will probably be listening to you than have ever listened to anyone in the world. Think of something to say. And so they're in lunar orbit. They're taking the camera, and they can now show the Earth, and they can now show the lunar surface as they orbit around the Earth, the moon, on Christmas Eve.
The broadcast begins without an image because they haven't pushed the button. They didn't know it until they were told by, I believe, Jim Carr is the name who informed them back from Houston's Manned Control.
Yes. But
now the mystery of what they were going to say, and this requires some backstory. Frank Borman took it upon himself to make choices, but he asked for help. Who did he ask, Bob?
It's very important to start with Julian Shea, the public relations guy at NASA, because when he told Borman, think of something to say, Borman said, well, you're head of public relations. Can you give me some advice? And this tells us how different the world was compared to today. Julian Shea told Borman, it is not my place as a public relations guy to tell you what to say. It's your job. Figure it out. When I was first told this by Julian Shea, I was just flabbergasted because you just assume public relations guy at NASA will dictate and control and tell the astronauts what to say. But no, in this case, NASA told them, you're on your own. Speak. We trust you'll speak responsibly, but you're free Americans. You should say what you want. So Borman now had to think of something. He's a jet pilot. He's a test pilot. He's not really an intellectual like this. This calls for an intellectual flair. And the other astronauts, too, they couldn't come up with anything. Everything they came up with didn't seem to fit the majesty of the moment. So Bauman talks to a guy he had met, a public relations guy he had met on one of his world tours after January 7th. I'm sorry, after Gemini 7th, a guy named Cyborg, who is a public relations guy, but a very intellectual person. And Bauman says, can you help me? And Cy Bauman says, sure, it'll be a piece of cake. I'll come up with something for you. Cy Bauman went nuts. He couldn't think of anything. How do you say something that's going to match the majesty and the significance, historical significance of this moment, that will also express things with goodwill to everyone in the world? So he turned to a friend, a guy named Joe Layton, who was also a public relations guy, who, interestingly enough, worked for both the Johnson and the Nixon administrations over years. And Joe Layton had written for Mills film scripts, and he said, oh, yeah, this will be easy. I'll come up with something. And he spent one evening going nuts trying to come up with something. He couldn't figure it out. He sat at the typewriter, typed things, ripped it up, papers everywhere. His wife comes down about 2 in the morning, sees all these crumpled papers everywhere. She gets scared. What is he thinking of committing suicide? He's writing a suicide note. What's going on? And he had been looking at the New Testament because it is Christmas and that's Jesus' birthday. And he was trying to see if there was something there, but it didn't work because it was just one religion. It doesn't seem right to just talk about Jesus. And she looked at him and she looked at the Bible and she said, why don't you start at the beginning? And he looks at the first words of the Old Testament, Genesis, and he says, that's perfect. Read the first 12 verses. Because that would be language that applies to the three most popular, important religions in the world. And it's not picking one religion over another. And those words have to do with the beginning of our first exploration of another world. And so that's what he did. He wrote it up. He wrote up a description. He gave a final paragraph for Bauman to say to close the broadcast. And he gave it to Cyborgin. Borgin then gave it to Bauman. Bauman showed it to the other astronauts. They said, this is perfect. This is great. This is exactly what we'll do. We'll each say several verses, and then Bauman will close the broadcast. They told nobody at NASA what they were going to do. They did not tell their wives what they were going to do. The only person they told what they were going to do was Fred Haines, who was the NASA announcer that would talk to the rest of the world, and they only told him so that he would know how to speak after they finished and not say anything inappropriate. But he was the only one who knew. So when they were orbiting the moon that Christmas Eve, Bill Anders begins to read from the Bible. They first describe the lunar surface as it's going by. You can see it. They're talking about how it's cold and dark and very inhospitable. And then they have a message for the world. And Anders begins by starting to read these verses. And Jim Lovell picks
Anders,
it up.
Anders' voice is higher than Lovell's voice. Lovell's voice is a baritone.
That's right.
And then Bauman is third. Is that the correct order?
That's the correct order. If you can go online and you can definitely hear them do this. It's still on the air. It's still available to listen to. And Lovell's voice is deeper. So he was very distinct in between. And he had a little trouble with the very strange wording of 17th century King James Bible poetry, but he said it well. Frank Bauman then finished it. On the ground, I remember this, and everyone I spoke to listened, said, a hush everywhere came down on the world when they were speaking these words. And then Bauman finished, and he paused, and he finished with the words, and from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth. And then they cut the broadcast. They were just about to hit Luna Terminator of night, and they cut the broadcast. They were done.
What you can see while they're reading is the surface of the moon, but it's extremely vague. Ancient TV. It was a surprise to everybody what they read. There was no prior information. Television didn't know what they were going to do. So Cronkite and the other broadcasters couldn't tell you a half hour beforehand, be prepared for the Bible.
No, everyone knew, by the way, this is going to be significant. We knew this. Christmas Eve. America was a very religious country at that time. I mean, people went to church. They went to synagogue. They thought we were doing this for moral reasons, not just simply exploration. It was very much an undercurrent of our culture. And these guys then expressed it. And it was very important. This was not a propaganda effort on their part. They didn't want to brag. They wanted to say something with goodwill that would encompass and bring everyone into the adventure. So they picked these words to try to bring everybody in, to express goodwill to the rest of the world. And they succeeded far more than they could ever imagine.
All right, we've got to get him home. There's a bump or two. Bob Zimmerman. I'm John Batchelor.